You wait around for 20 years for some renewable energy projects, and then suddenly several of them arrive at the same time. Tymbald seems very nervous about accepting private sector support for renewable power generation in the Isle of Man, but perhaps the generation hub at Andrus Airfield might tickle their fancy. Robert Murray's family have owned Andrus Airfield for about 40 years. Why has he brought the project forward?
I'm very interested in renewable energy and have been for the last 5 years, and then I've bought together a team to hopefully see if we can develop the renewable agenda.
Hi, my name's Ed Jessamine from IPV FlexGen. We're a renewable energy development consultancy. Our focus is on looking at projects for distributed energy solutions, i.e. combining different renewable technologies to generate power, particularly where it could be utilised at the generation point.
Brian?
I've been a farmer all my life, and I spent 6 years as president of Manx National Farmers Union, and in that role I've always been interested in diversified incomes for agriculture.
Okay, well, if we start then with you, Robert, tell us what got you interested in this this venture.
I think basically as much as anything, I'm so upset at the state of agriculture. I think agriculture is in a mess. I think it's been in the decline for quite a few years now. Now, obviously, I'm heading towards 60, so I'm coming towards the end of my agricultural career, but I've got a son and a daughter who are involved in the business one way or another. And equally, certainly my son's friends are. They're young farmers. And I find it increasingly upsetting that if they were in the UK, they would have the opportunities to diversify into energy. We've got all the legislation that's come in, the climate bill, everything else. And to me, I see it as a perfect opportunity for agriculture to actually becoming mainstream, so to speak, and not just in the production of food. I think it's both. I think if we can be a food producer and an energy producer on Ireland for our nation, I think that's brilliant.
And for those who don't know yet, your proposal is all about growing crops, well, or partly at least about growing crops for energy production.
Very much so, very much so. I think, to give my own personal history, we grew a lot of milling wheat for Laxey Glen Mills, which obviously then went into Ramsey Bakery. In fact, at one stage we were probably the biggest grower and supplier into the mill. But obviously with the demise of the bakery, that job has virtually disappeared. And my concern for the industry is it's all right having one or two niche suppliers who you can supply to, almost the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, but that is no good for mainstream agriculture. Mainstream agriculture needs a reasonable turnover. We've got some damn good farmers on the Isle of Man, and where they're going at the moment, they're heading towards oblivion, and it's not right.
And Ed, I mean, you have experience in helping proposals like this get off the ground. What is your direct involvement in this Andrus Energy project?
Well, I've been working in renewable energy for over 15 years now, and I sort of echo a little bit what Robert's just said. I mean, for a lot of the farmers I've worked with in the UK, the development of an energy project on the farm has been a lifeline. It's been a guaranteed income that supported their activities and allowed them to provide security to banks, mostly, that they've got an income coming in for a long-term period. So our experience over time, though, has seen a diminishing grid in the UK, much more challenges to get onto the network. And so my involvement in the project is experience around how do you overcome grid constraint, how do you overcome challenges, how do you build an energy project that is sustainable and capable of providing a baseload of power. When I met Robert over 3 years ago, it was as a direct response to a commercial proposition to develop a growing company at Andrus, but it needed power that couldn't be provided from the grid, and therefore we needed to look at opportunities to generate power on site, and that's where I got started.
And it's moved on a bit, quite a bit, I think, since then, hasn't it?
We've moved on. Yeah, I think we've moved on quite considerably. I mean, initially we were trying to work out how do we generate a baseload, and the first thing I always look at is what power can I get from the grid? That's my guarantee. What can I actually get off the network? And thereafter, what do we need to do to supplement that? And then it's the seasonality of renewables. How do we generate power all year round to give us the power that we need to run any plant? So we've started off with an idea, and that's grown because as I've been on the island and working with Robert and friends of his, I've become to understand that actually there really is a need to do something that brings in more of the farming community into the project. And I think that the AD plant that we're suggesting not only provides us with the opportunity for baseload energy generation, but it allows us to bring lots of Robert's colleagues, friends and partners into the project and have a much broader economic benefit for the Isle of Man.
And you mentioned their baseload energy. For those listeners who aren't aware of what that is, could you just explain a bit about that?
What I mean by that is developing a project that means that we've got available power 365 days a year. And obviously with things like solar, you have seasonality and the daytime changes in terms of its production. Wind, again, is not always available and not always available at the speeds that you need to run the turbines properly. What we're looking to do is how do we balance that? How do we bring that power load together and create an ability to push a certain guaranteed amount onto the network continuously, or in this instance, to provide this power around our private grid that we'd be looking at with a guarantee that it will be available all the time as and when required, in the same way any energy network works.
Brian, you are also a former big cheese in the farming industry, and what's your involvement with this particular project?
I'm just facilitating and helping out due to my previous interest. I was in president of the Farmers Union, looking at diversified incomes for farmers and looking across the water at what was being achieved through renewables on farms in the UK. I tried quite hard at the time to engage with Manx Utilities and DEFA over getting the same routes to market for farmers on the Isle of Man, and unfortunately that hasn't materialised into much. But on top of that, when I was in the Farmers Union, we had the biosphere and we've got climate change, and that is affecting, you know, as a farmer you live and work with the weather and the climate, and it is changing. And yeah, where I live on the north of the Isle of Man, if sea levels rise 10 foot, I'll be living in a bungalow instead of a house and going home in a boat instead of a car. So that I've got interest basically in this project to get him motivated on several different levels. But from a pure agriculture point of view, the big difference or the big change with this project is instead of producing something and exporting it and losing all your profit margin on a ferry charge, it's being produced and used on island, and that is the big game changer, as far as I can see.
And why would farmers choose to do something like this as opposed to do what we would expect farmers to be doing, which is producing, I don't know, milk, cereals, meat? What would attract them to this project?
Well, ultimately, profits. Unfortunately, 95%, or according to DEFA, 95% of the food eaten on the island is imported, which, yes, there's some artisan projects on the island, and all well and good and very good to them, but as Robert stated earlier, that doesn't keep mainstream agriculture going, and so a lot of mainstream agriculture is exported, and then the ferry charges reduce those profit margins. So no farmer's going to change what they do, and unless, you know, there's a better way forward for them, and I believe there is in this project.
So then Robert, I mean the site may not be familiar with to a number of our listeners. So can you explain a little bit about where it is that you're proposing to do this?
Well, it's basically the old Andreas Airfield, disused wartime airfield. It tends to sit a little bit in a bowl. So the amount of people who actually know it's there is minimal. The amount of people who say, "Oh, I know about Jerby, know about Ronald's Way, Andreas." There's no airfield at airfield at Andreas, but there is, and it's quite brownfield as well. There's those runways are there. You can't take them away. They're disused now. They're not in a state whereby you'd fly aeroplanes or anything like that from them. But it may be a national asset that we can use for something else, and that to me is why we're looking down the energy route.
And what I suppose maybe if we got into some more detail then, specifically what it is that you're proposing, because there is a biodigester side to this, but it's more than just that, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a hub. It's an energy hub. It combines several technologies. And I think the thing that's really interesting in renewable energy generally, this is not going to be the be-all and end-all for the Isle of Man. And I think that's true of any renewables. You need a blend and you need all sorts of different projects to give us the whole. So, yeah, we can produce a percentage of it, but we certainly can't produce it all. And I think, as has already been stated, the one thing with this project is, unlike a lot of other renewables, as it being a hub, it's baseload, so it's there all the time, so the lights aren't going out. Where I think, as Ed has already stated, you do get a certain amount of intermittent power with other renewables. Well, hopefully the AD will take that out, but also it's the win-win, isn't it? Because not only is it producing baseload, it's also producing a seriously good income for agriculture and helping agriculture. And as we'll probably go through it and describe even more detail, obviously the byproduct from this, from the digester, is a highly nutritious fertilizer. So you're also getting that cyclical effect on Ireland, where again we're reducing imports, again as Brian's already said, with a lot of cost of ferries and the boats, and it becomes more and more of a holistic thing for the industry. Like you could say, in time, we do talk about, and they are actually out there now, they're talking about methane powered tractors. Well, in theory, you could do the whole process with totally green fuels, and it's a complete secular production.
One of the criticisms that I've already heard, perhaps by a less well-informed politician, is that this project potentially is going to result in a more carbon-intensive approach to agriculture, because we'll need more fertilizer to be able to grow the crops that will ultimately end up in the anaerobic digester.
That's not the case.
That's what I was about to ask. What is the actual position then?
The position is, For every say 100 ton of fuel that goes into the digester, 90 ton of that will come back in digestate. So all you're extracting is the methane, and all the rest is a byproduct. It's a byproduct that can go back onto the land. So it's very much self-generating, to be honest, and self-perpetuating. You've obviously got, when this process starts in the first year, as the digester's up and running, you will obviously be putting artificial fertilisers to grow that initial crop. But once you're into the system, yeah, it's almost self-generating.
So, Ed, I mean, how does this actually work? Because I mean, anaerobic digestion is a thing that happens. It's quite a normal thing in parts of the United Kingdom. So, how does that work? How would it work on the Isle of Man?
So just to sort of reflect a little bit on what Brian was just saying about energy crops, we're not encouraging farmers to change what they're doing. This is a complementary activity to what they're doing, so that they can increase their revenues. And what we'll be doing is, we've identified crops which we believe can be grown on the island successfully. that are reflective of the island's biosphere, that could be maintained and brought back to the what is effectively called a concrete cow, where these are mulched down. And it's important as well, to the reason we mentioned this site is a certain amount of water is required for this, and we do have water at site, which is really important. And we extract the methane. We can do several things with the methane. We can burn it, which would produce, when we drive a generator to produce electricity from that, and that gives us the if you like, the base load that we were talking about, the ability to ramp that up and down, just as you do with any gas generator that you currently have on the island. But we can also wait our time on that, so when we're producing more solar in the summer months, we won't necessarily need to run the AD plant in the same way. So it's all about managing the technologies together, managing this blend together. But as Robert's just highlighted, we're also looking with companies at how do you keep it as a clean operation. And you can extract the CO2 and clean the CO2 up and move it back into either growing, which is something we'd previously looked at. You need CO2 to assist with indoor plant growing, and agrivoltaics, which is the production of plants in and around solar arrays and using renewable energy. It's something that we're very wedded to at the site. We can talk more about that. But also looking at more advanced technologies to capture any carbon emissions from running a generator, which we'd then put into an extraction of effectively a biofuel, a biomethanol, which would capture that. And it's the basis of sustainable aviation fuel, so SAF. And that's what we're very interested in looking at as well.
So effectively, you can create an additional fuel effectively as a byproduct from burning the methane. Is that?
You can do, yes. You're not creating the fuel from it per se. What you're doing is you're taking a certain amount of the production in liquid form from the AD plant, and that's creating your biofuel. But what you're doing is you're taking the carbon that's generated from the engine running, and capturing that and putting that in and effectively storing that within that biofuel. So it makes it cleans up the operation of the AD plant, and obviously you're putting it into a much cleaner fuel. So it's a fuel that could replace diesel, essentially.
We're recording this programme in advance of your meeting, so we don't know what's going to happen at the public meeting, but I'm guessing that people there will be concerned, any reference to methane, they'll be thinking there's going to be a terrible smell. So that would be probably the first thing that people would want to understand. Is there going to be a terrible smell from this plant?
Obviously, when you develop a project like this, you're very, very conscious of health and safety and also of environmental matters surrounding the plant. One of the reasons that the location is so good is that it is some distance from any private property. I don't believe there's going to be any form of emissions issues. We have projects in the UK that sit on business parks. I've wandered around these sites and you literally cannot smell anything outside of them. There are obviously areas internally that have odours, but no, this is not an issue that I think people need to worry about.
And the other, perhaps more exciting element to this is that potentially there could be some district heating associated with the project.
Yeah, I mean, certainly the AD plant does have excess heat. And again, when we're starting to look at some of our storage technologies, they can produce excess heat. And we're really, really keen to see whether we can do that. I think there's some social housing relatively close to the site, which would be a great experimental zone for us to do it. And indeed, the people that we're talking to about operating and managing these sites are really keen to do that. I mean, this is a beautiful thing about a hub like this. It can put an awful lot back into the community. And I do think district heating is certainly one of those areas we need to look at, because heating quite clearly is a massive challenge when it comes to decarbonisation of the island.
Brian, then, I mean, you've been to the various meetings with the farmers, and I would imagine, if my experience of meetings with Manx farmers is anything to go by, there would be a certain amount of scepticism. How was that scepticism overcome?
Yeah, we arranged two meetings, one in the north and one in the south of the island, and invited farmers along, and I did a presentation to them, just outlining and explaining and how they could get involved. We then put out for people to expressions of interest and ask the basic questions of what sort of acreage would you have available if this project went ahead, with all the caveats still to come of price, etc. And the figures we got back, we had farms that replied came to a total of 9,000 acres. And to run this project, a 6 megawatt AD plant, we're looking for about 3,500 acres of production. So, as Ed said, complements in a way what farmers are already doing. It's not about stopping food production on the island. The two can go hand in hand. But it's fairly obvious that there is the availability out there to get this project started.
And crucially, of course, from what's been said, after the first year, there will be a plentiful supply of fertiliser for farmers who do engage in this project.
Yeah. The people who engage will be the first to receive the digestate and be part of the project. So.
And as far as getting farmers signed up, presumably until the proposal has got the necessary things like planning permission and various other supports, which we can talk to Robert about shortly, it's difficult to get the farmers to sign on the dotted line to say absolutely, but you've effectively got as much by way of commitment from farmers as you could expect at this stage.
We've had committed 4,500 acres, of which initially would be looking to use 3,500, so it's doable on that respect. As you say, getting people to sign, etc., that'll all come down to figures, and ultimately that will come down to Manx Utilities and grid applications and that sort of thing. So,
And just looking at this then, with a kind of, I don't know whether you have a ballpark figure for this, but the benefit to the Manx agricultural industry from something like this, 3,500 acres, presumably that you can work out how many tons per acre and the approximate profitability of this. What will be the financial benefit on an annual basis to farmers?
There's that side of it, but probably more importantly, there is land that is doing very little out there on the countryside. There's virtually 1,000 acres of land which was supplying Laxey Glen Mill, / Ramsey Bakery, Noah Bakehouse, etc. So a lot of that land isn't being used on the same intensity as previously. The island used to have a very good contract supplying Mournflake with oats, and that one seems to have dropped by the wayside now as well due to changes in EU policy in the UK. So there's virtually 2,000 acres there before you start, and people will say to you as you drive around the countryside that there's land not being farmed very intensively that could be brought back into productive use.
Presumably, though, farmers can expect similar returns to what they would have been growing. So if they were growing milling wheat, for example, they would expect at least a similar return, particularly bearing in mind they won't have to export the product and they won't have to, after year one, they won't have to import fertiliser.
Yeah, we've done the expressions of interest with the caveats on price, etc. I mean, the price has got to be right for the project to go forward. It works in the UK, farmers supplying AD plants, so I see no difference why it shouldn't work on the island, farmers supplying AD plants, plus the benefit of not having to export a commodity product to the UK market. You can use it, produce it and use it on island. It should, on a simple basis, be a better route forward.
I think also, Brian, as well, isn't it, there's the certainty of reasonably long contracts. You've got some sustainability in your business. You can then go and invest in your business. The trouble is where we are now, everything's on a knife edge, and you don't know 1 year to the next exactly where you're going to be. Well, if we can get into long-term contracts, it's exactly what any business requires, because they can sit there, they can invest long-term, and there's some comfort. And we had that for long enough, as Brian inferred, with the likes of the mill and the bakery. We had, as growers, we had really good working relationship with the late Jimmy Duncan. And that's all disappeared now. And, the industry is crying out for something else to replace that. It's not very nice. You know, I've coming towards the end of my working life, and I would expect my son, who's nearly 30, to have the same chances as I had. And at the moment, they're just not there. And it really does hurt.
So in terms of moving this project forward then, is it going to be a sort of a phased development? Because you've talked of the anaerobic digester. There's also been talk of solar array. I've also heard possibly is there maybe a wind turbine or two on the cards. How is this project going to move forward?
I think you need to talk to the technical man, in all fairness, right, to this. Like I keep telling you, I'm just a thick farmer. But it's something we've worked on between us, but certainly the actual idea of the hub and how it's moved and how it develops is basically Ed's baby.
Well, with that introduction, Ed.
So I think what I said earlier was that when we're looking at a hub like this, an energy hub, what we're looking at is combined technologies. So we're sort of understanding the potential of things like wind, things like solar. What's the potential production we can get from them? How does that contribute to an overall power demand that we want to achieve? So in our early discussions with Max Utilities, one of the concerns that they have about private investment in renewables is the stability of the network. And how is the network balanced out? How can they guarantee if we're putting power onto the grid, we're not going to see big swings in available power that they've got to manage? So instead, we're managing it on our site, and that's what makes this unique. And so effectively, it complements whatever is being done on the grid, whatever Max Utilities and the government, the Isle of Man, is investing in. Our project can sit alongside that very comfortably, and we can switch on and off power export from the site as they require. Fundamentally, though, what we're looking at is, can we build a baseload within the site itself that ensures that businesses and organisations, the commercial organisations I alluded to earlier, have confidence to locate there? Because at the moment, we can't be provided with that power from the grid, so there is no confidence. And without that confidence, why would people invest in the Isle of Man? So this is an opportunity for the Isle of Man to demonstrate that it is open to investment, to working with private organisations to build a strong economic case, particularly for development in the north, which has a very, very weak grid. What we're looking at here is a mix of the AD plant, which is, as we discussed, our baseload, an opportunity to work with multiple farmers across the island to support a project like that. And you said, is it scalable? It's absolutely scalable. We start at a certain point and we can work this up in a modular way to respond to demand. We are looking at ground mounted solar PV, which will give us good production in the north of the island during the summer. It's the best solar irradiation in the Isle of Man. So it's logical to have a good base load up there, and there's land to do it, where it can be developed very, very discreetly. And we can continue to work the land around the solar arrays, as we've discussed. This is not being sterilized. We do need to consider wind, and I know it's a challenge for a lot of people, but from an aesthetic perspective, but you're a very windy island, and it's a great resource. Why not grab it? Why not make it work for you? But we are looking at something which is contained within the site, something that isn't going to have a major visual impact, and something that's specifically to give us assistance with our baseload during the evenings and during the winter months when we're seeing less solar irradiation. We've also got to look at different types of storage solution. So we're looking at what's the most effective technologies. We're very keen on vanadium flow technologies, so longer duration battery storage, something that gives us a chance to fully store the power and export the power on a daily basis. As we've mentioned, district heating already can spin off of that. We're looking at things like compressed air storage, again, which is a completely emission-free storage solution. All projects that I'm working on in other jurisdictions and in the UK, because we're very, very keen to see how do islands become independent in their own energy, how can they have better levels of energy sovereignty. And fundamentally, I think what I hope your listeners will pick up from the discussion is that you create a circular economy within the Isle of Man from doing this. The farmers generate income, the farmers spend income, they pay taxes, they bring those taxes here into the Isle of Man coffers. The energy on the grid means that you've got more balance and less vulnerability to purchasing power from the UK. Let's not forget that the UK buys its power from other people, so it can't guarantee you a price. Within our setting, and one of the challenges we've got is people suggested that private companies would be more expensive for energy. I don't agree with that. I don't think it's ever been tested. It's impossible to test it until we've got clarity on what connecting to the grid might be, what the length of power agreement we might have to export, and the size of that power agreement. But the key is that if we were generating on island, apart from customers we might have that are based in Andreas, we're only going to have Max Utility to sell it to. So if they don't like the price, we don't sell anything. So it's defeatist for us to start trying to make it really expensive. What we want to do is something that works with the government, works with utility, encourages opportunity of the green economy for the farming community, strengthens the network at the north of the island, and really provides the sort of energy sovereignty that the Isle of Man can be proud of.
And I suppose then in terms of making this happen, obviously you're over on the island this week to primarily to address the public meeting, but presumably you're hopeful of discussions with presumably Manx Utilities Authority will be pretty crucial to any significant progress being made with this.
Yeah, I mean, the positive thing is that it's undeniable that Manx Utility recognise that this potential project does complement what they're trying to do. So we need to understand what are the blockers, what would stop something like this moving forward. You know, are they supportive of community project, which fundamentally it is. It involves so many farmers on the island, and you know, are they supportive of that? It's as simple as that. We hope they will be. We think there's room for many to invest in the island's energy system, as long as the projects make sense. But to get investment, we need to have the encouragement from government that they want to see this. If that message is loud and clear, then we have the people that will invest in this project, and it will happen. If it's diluted, if it's pushed to one side, then the opportunity will go.
And certainly in a debate on another renewable energy project in Tynwald last week, one of the concerns that a number of Tynwald members seemed to express was that in some way it was substantially better to have publicly owned renewable generation than private. And they were citing things like, well, if it's in the private sector's hands, it's out with our control, and the private sector can then just decide how they want to proceed, and they might just, I don't know, decide that it wasn't profitable and stop producing. And then how would we manage? How would you address those sorts of concerns about? Because I think there's a genuine concern here about energy security for the island, and if it's under public ownership, decisions taken clearly are down to our elected politicians. Whereas in private hands, you will have to make decisions based on profitability and whether you're going to make any money out of it.
You're right. I mean, the project needs to generate profit. It needs to generate profit to employ people to work in it. It needs to generate profit to keep it well maintained and operating at an optimum level. The reality is that we've always talked to the government about partnership. We've talked to Manx Utility about partnership. I think their involvement in the project is vital. However, we have the experience to deliver this at cost, and we know what we've got to do to make sure that it happens, works, is well looked after and runs. Fundamentally, if we find that we cannot run it in an affordable way and it is required that we have to pull out, we're going to have left a huge amount of investment in the ground. So you could look at it two ways. One, if the government made that investment and it doesn't work, that's taxpayer money down the toilet. But if it's private money, we don't walk away from it. We need to make it work. We don't have the luxury of being able to say, oh, that was a mistake. There are lots of stakeholders that will lose confidence in us in that respect. So it will be very measured, our approach to this. Fundamentally, if it's not viable, if we can't produce electricity for the island at an affordable price over the long term, then we are not going to invest. The investment and the cost of the investment will come down to what the connection costs are and various things like that, and the duration of support that the project gets. So it has to be a partnership with government one way or another. It has to be a partnership with Manx Utilities one way or the other. And I think that looking for reasons not to really explore this is a problem, because people have been involved in putting renewable projects in for 15 years. I don't see an awful lot in the Isle of Man. So I don't have an awful lot of confidence that overnight you're going to change that without help, because it didn't happen in the UK. It was private money that got it going.
And I suppose, you know, you're here to answer the question, so I won't speculate. On the basis then that these projects have been established just the other side of the Irish Sea, in many locations, and they have been established profitably. If you were a betting man, where would you put the odds of coming up with a successful business plan to make this project work at Andrus?
Well, I've been working on the project for 3 years, so it was always a complete waste of time. I wouldn't have been doing that. I think we've still got a number of hurdles to overcome. I think that whilst we haven't got a completely open door, I think people understand why this particular project is beneficial to the island. And hopefully, over the course of the next few months, we'll be sitting down and looking at it in a very open-minded way, in a way that says, actually, do you know, this could work. I think it's important for the farming community that it is taken seriously. But fundamentally, I need to keep it moving. I'll lose the confidence of the farming community if we don't. And that would be a travesty.
And Robert, obviously you're keen to press on with this. You're aware of, having been formerly a vice president of the Manx National Farmers Union, of how politics has a habit of slowing things up rather than speeding them along. Where do you think you're at with this at the moment?
I think we're at a crossroads, in all fairness. I think the public as well have a say in it as well. I think, and that's why we're doing what we're doing. I think to be informative, trying to be as open and honest as possible and explain what we're doing or what we're intending to do, so we don't hear all the knee-jerk rubbish that is out there. And that's why we're going about it in the way we're going about it and trying to get out to the community as much as we can. I think one of the easiest ways of explaining it, or potentially, is at the moment, let's be real, we buy power in from the UK. Well, that UK power, A, is produced by private companies, but also those private companies will be paying UK tax, not Manx tax. And equally, if they're getting green power from UK farmers, it's UK farmers that are benefiting, not Manx farmers. Now, to me, it's an absolute no-brainer that we're producing locally, paying Manx tax. And as Ed has already said, we're getting that multiplier effect into the economy. And I think it's really, really serious. And, you know, that's why I'm passionate, because I think my industry has a real position to play, or part to play, in where we go as a nation. I think the nation's at a crossroads, isn't it? We like to say we're independent, and we are independent. But why, if we're so independent and we have the resources to do what we're doing, should we be relying on our neighbour, when, in my humble opinion, we don't need to be?
And certainly in my time, which is now getting further and further in the distant past, there was a very rough figure, but around about £150 million a year spent on fossil fuels. And obviously, at the moment at least, the Isle of Man doesn't produce any fossil fuels. So that's £150 million that leaves the Manx economy never to be seen again.
Absolutely.
How much of that 150, bearing in mind electricity generation, it was roughly about a third split, transport, heating homes and producing electricity. So if we're saying 50 million, and this is back then, so it's probably a lot more by now, if 50 million was spent by the MUA in terms of buying in the gas that allows us to switch the lights on through electricity generation, how much of that would your project effectively be stopping leaving the Isle of Man?
Well, you're asking me to do sums in my head, Phil. But again, I keep coming back to it. I'm a thick farmer.
But it's something like, is it about a third of the usage, electricity usage that your project could produce?
I think it's nearer 25%, to 25%. Be honest with you. I think you've... But we've got to, how can I put it? Yeah, I personally, as a local, would take the view that we should be taking 100% of our generation from renewable energy and sourced on island. We're not the solution. We're not the total solution. Let's be real about this. But I think with a combination of several projects, and we hear all these different projects, and I think every project should then be standing out on its own commercial merit and stand on its own 2 feet. But with a massive combination, we can do it. And what's more, and I think Brian would probably agree with me, even the existing interconnector we've got, if we get in that lucky position to be able to produce enough or more energy than we require, we can ship that energy back to the UK. And as opposed to power that's coming in, which, let's be real, is blended power, it's not green, it's partially green, but we could ship power out that was 100% green, and to me that's a real win-win for the Manx economy and for the reputation of the Isle of Man in general.
Ed, I mean, is this part of the calculation? I mean, presumably you have all kinds of sums and figures and arguments that you need to put to the decision makers on the Isle of Man, but presumably the energy security argument is a very strong one.
So, as I said earlier, I mean, we've been very conscious of the fact that if we're going to do something which added value to the Manx grid, then we needed to do something that guaranteed a certain supply throughout the year. So that's the focus. That is the key focus of this project. But fundamentally, it's also about producing baseload at site that allows us to talk to the commercial clients again that we wanted to be there. At this point in time, we're not asking Manx Utilities to take the power. We'd like to, because it makes logical sense, because I'd also like power in. So where we're at the moment is saying, could we have a connection to your grid to buy power from you? Because as you pointed out, it takes time to build all this resource and get it into place and get it operating. But it might be that we want some power in to begin with. Well, if we've got that cable bringing power in, why don't we use it to take power out? This is the kind of logic we're working with. And at the moment, we're reasonably confident we can get a new cable power coming in, but we don't know that we're going to be able to put the power back out. The problem with that is that makes that cable in super expensive if you have no way of generating a revenue, and it's a part of infrastructure we're buying for the island, but with no way of getting any revenue back out of it. So from my perspective, the hold up here is how do we get this joined up thinking working? How do we go from a point of saying yes, it's complementary to, well, it is complementary, so why aren't we doing it in combination with the other things we're doing? Because it's not costing the government any more money. This is private investment. We're effectively going to build that piece of the infrastructure.
There are the agricultural benefits that have been mentioned. There's the energy security element to this, possibly a district heating system. It seems like the sort of thing that government should be supporting.
I think it is. I think it is. I think, you know, we make a big play, don't we, as a nation, that we're a biosphere. Well, what a unique situation to be in if we can, you know, as we're selling it forward and we're going to have to reapply for it again, if we're producing all our own green power. You know, we could literally become an energy aisle here before we're finished. And I think that's got to be something we've got to be aiming over a period of time to do. And I'm not saying government aren't thinking maybe along those lines, but we have to get started. We can't carry on going round and round in ever-decreasing circles. You know, the legislation has been put in place by politicians with an aspiration to get somewhere. Well, the clock is ticking, and we need to just be getting on with it. And as Ed has rightly said, this is not a case of big business or private sector trying to walk all over the public sector. Far from it. It's one of let's all work together as a community to achieve a common goal. And to me, that's the most important thing to take out of this.
And again, in terms of the Alabang government, I mean, just place yourself in the position of a decision maker. Somebody comes forward with this proposal to you. What are the sorts of questions that you would be looking to have answered, would you think?
Well, my first one would be, how much is this going to cost me? Hmm. And when it's at no cost to the public, to the taxpayer, that's a big winner to start with, to me. And as Ed has already inferred, if it goes, pardon the French, tits up, all that infrastructure is still going to be there to swoop up. So to me, it's not a big gamble. I just think it's an opportunity. And I think it's an opportunity government should start to grasp. And it's something, you know, we've always been, and we've had long discussions with government, and there's always been, the thing has always come back to baseload, and we don't want all this intermittent power thrown on the grid. What are we going to do with it? We're not, you know, we don't want to get in a situation with the weaknesses and frailties in the grid of it all blowing up in our faces. Well, I'd like to think we've come up with a proposition and a proposal that gets all around that. And then you've got the added economic advantages and social advantages on top of that.
Ed, final word then. I mean, in terms of the whole project, what are the high level numbers associated with this? How much energy potentially is going to be produced? How much energy are you going to be able to store on site? You know, where are the sorts of figures there that we're dealing with?
At a high level, we're obviously working on what the AD plant will do, as alluded to earlier. We've got basic numbers of what we think we can do. And as we start to take that forward, that'll give us clarity. But our objective is to have a 10 megawatt base load generated from the site, which will be a combination of, we're looking at 30 megawatts of solar potentially, up to 3 megawatts of wind, storage with 10 megawatt hours, and 6 to 10 megawatts in the AD plant. That should give us the base load we need over the year. There's quite a bit of modelling that needs to go into that. In terms of build costs, until we've got some response from Manx Utilities in terms of what we need to do to improve the infrastructure to connect, we don't understand that yet, so we haven't got that number to input. And I think once we've got all that together, we can start to do some proper modelling around the cost of energy, the levelised cost of energy. But to be fair, where we're at the moment is we need to understand, is the community open-minded to the project? Do they see the value in it? Does it make common sense? Do they accept that it's complementary? And are they open to working with private investors and to see them as part of the solution rather than a problem that's continuously knocking on their door, asking why they're doing nothing themselves?
That was project developer Robert Murray, Ed Jessamine, Managing Director of IPV FlexGen, and Agricultural Advisor Brian Brumby. What do you think? Does the project tick sufficient government target boxes to warrant support? Is it better for the public sector to take on the financial risk of developing renewable energy, or is it better to pay a bit more for the electricity and leave the risk with the private sector? Is a mix of both public and private sector investment the best way to limit risk to public money but maximise the benefit to consumers and the public purse? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com, and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Max Radio's website. For now, I'm Phil Gorn, Gunnar Myerson, Geisha Krum. Thanks for listening.